Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And we're back exploring our recent excursion to London with some new places and some old friends.
Our hearts and stomachs still in the same place. and we wish we'd never come back to all this white stuff. But we're managing, and I'm sure all of you are too, learning to live the old-fashioned way. Walking everywhere that you need to get anything, or actually taking the bus, as I did today, at an adventure today.
Yeah, I took the bus yesterday. Yeah. I got on the wrong bus they changed the route because of the snow.
Well, they're both real adventures because there's no way to get from the sidewalk to the roadway because there are piles of snow at the side of the road. But that's a story for another day and not something that you in warmer climes around the world will be interested in hearing about anyway.
Well, let's go visit our friends.
Let's go back to London. Two interviews coming up, both old friends, Sam Hart of Fino Tapas Restaurant and Bernard Yeo, August owner, proprietor, manager and everything of Kai Mayfair. Both places we've been before, and there were special reasons why we went back. Listeners, you know that On the Menu is always on the lookout for something new. But sometimes we find something so good that it's important that we retrace our steps. So we're retracing steps today to the very first overseas adventure that we made when the first time we ever recorded away from the studio. We came to London, and one of the nicest people that we met, a wonderful young man called Sam Hart, who with his brother Eddie owned a tapas restaurant. And we found out, of course, why Englishmen own a tapas restaurant, and we'll ask Sam to begin all over again because it's now 6 years later and we're back in the same place. It looks very similar, but there's been some adventures in between. But Sam, first of all, welcome back to On the Menu. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to see you both again.
And for those listeners who don't want to go back to 04, tell us about the Fino concept.
So we opened Fino in 2003. I'd been living in Barcelona and had fallen particularly in love with a tapas bar called Cal Pep, which you probably know. It's an amazing place, and it cooks just from a counter only. And what they do there is they take great raw ingredients, mostly seafood, cook them very simply, mostly on a plancha, the flat Spanish grill, and serve them up in small tapas-sized portions. And we were hugely inspired by that concept and came back to London and really felt that London had not embraced Spain and Spanish food as much as it should have done.
There was
people like Morrow, who's the only really famous one who'd started, but that's Spanish North African and it wasn't tapas. So we were tapas hadn't been done properly in London when we started. So we wanted to take this high level of cooking, great quality ingredients, but tapas style eating and Spanish food, and bring it back to London and try and do it really well, which is what it hadn't happened in London before.
Now, you hadn't owned a restaurant before, but there was restauranting and hotelling in your blood.
There is indeed. So my dad has Relais and Chateau Hotel up in Rutland, and they're just celebrating their 30th anniversary this year, in fact. And I think they've had a Michelin star there for 28 or 29 years. Hambleton Hall. So we grew up... Exactly. 2 hours from London, very close, easily accessible. So my brother and I grew up in the restaurant and hotel business. So although I hadn't had a restaurant before, we'd worked in restaurants and we'd grown up in this family of restaurateurs, I suppose.
But what did you learn? You must have learned some things owning a restaurant for the first time.
Oh, we learned almost everything. I mean, we had a good idea, which was good news, and we had a good chef, which was also good news, but we were very, very inexperienced, really, restaurateurs, so we had a very steep learning curve, because we were lucky enough that we opened and all the reviews were brilliant from the beginning, which meant we were absolutely packed and didn't really know what we were doing, so we had a very, very junior and sort of inexperienced team, particularly front of house.
So what changed? I mean, the place looks just as brand spankling beautiful as it did the first day we walked in. And two floods later.
Exactly. Well, I suppose, you know, we really believe that restaurants have to look, have to continue looking as new as when they first opened, even if it is 7 years later. You know, it's really important. Even if the customers might not notice that the paint is slightly tatty or the, something's fraying or whatever it is, actually subconsciously people do. So we do have quite a strict regime of refurbishment, which is why it looks, you know, like it did 6 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, yes, yes. I think we've got on a special today, we've got a nice monkfish caldereta, which they're brewing up at the moment, which I think that's probably what that is.
But the food concept stays true
The food concept is true to how we started. So it's great ingredients, lots of Spanish ingredients, you know, particularly large, you know, influence of seafood on the menu, and then cooked in tapas size portions. You know, that what's changed, I suppose, is the big change is that the chef we opened with, Jean-Philippe Patruno, left Fino about a year and a half ago to move to Quo Vadis, which is a sort of a modern British restaurant of ours. And his sous chef, who'd been with us since the beginning, Nieves Barragan, who's a Basque lady, took over at Fino. So we've had a change of chef, but very much, you know, she'd been with us since the start, so the style of the cooking hasn't changed. I suppose you might say that it might have become even more authentically Spanish than it was, although it was always very Spanish. But we've got lots of new specials, so we are constantly innovating. You know, the menu changes twice daily, and there's always new dishes on.
Do you have specifically Basque dishes on?
A few, but we tend to keep it, national rather than regional Spanish food. You know, we feel that, you know, although London, a lot has changed with Spanish food in London over the last 7 years, but we're probably not quite ready for regional Spanish food yet.
Well, I mean, the whole world's cuisine has been rocked by Spanish cuisine.
Yes.
Starting with Fira and Adria, and then moving through all the Basque chefs in the San Sebastian region, and I mean, it's major influence.
A major influence. But funnily enough, doing something, most of them, quite different from what we do. Because, of course, people like Ferran and the great and famous and deservedly so Spanish chefs of today are mostly, great innovators, very interested in molecular gastronomy, very interested in high elaboration, which of course is the very opposite of what we do, which is, much more traditional, finding a very nice piece of fish and not doing very much to it, style of cooking.
You know, actually, I read and did an article on this, that the real strength of, say, Basque cooking is that they have not lost track of their roots, their flavors, and particularly their ingredients.
Yeah, well, that's nice
that's
to hear. That's good to hear.
Yeah. What do you think's going to happen when Ferran closes El Bulli for 2 years?
We had dinner with Ferran about a couple of months ago, and
he
didn't mention he was closing.
You're kidding.
But I think it's a brilliant PR trick. Not PR trick.
But it's the second time he did that.
It's such a clever idea because he's had to come up with 32, unbelievably innovative dishes every year for the past however many years now. Is it 15,
yeah.
15 years or something?
Oh, anyway. We were there in 2000.
A very long time. And, you can't keep being a world leader at that year after year after year. You know, one imagines you just need a break. So instead of coming up with next year's menu, which he didn't think would be quite as good as last year's or the years before, and have him himself knocked off the sort of top spot in the world's greatest restaurants, he said, you know what, I can't quite think of what I'm going to do next year, so we're going to close, 2 years while I work out what it is I want to do again. You know, I just think it's a masterpiece, really.
No.
You know, because otherwise he was just about to get knocked off by some of the young pretenders.
You think he was?
Well, I guess so.
Who do you think would do it?
Well, I don't know. Everyone's saying that place in what's it called in Copenhagen.
Oh yeah, Noma.
Noma, which
that's where I'd love to go.
Everyone's tipping that for very high up. You know,
okay.
Obviously the fat duck's always been snapping at his heels. People like Muguritz in San Sebastian, obviously.
Muguritz left.
You know, so there's sort of three or four, five guys who've been snapping at his heels a bit. But I think it was, you know, it was a clever idea.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think we might be having today? What are some of the things that today you'd be recommending that we might enjoy?
Well, we've got we're always changing. You know, the menu changes every day, but we've got some nice sort of seasonal Spanish things at the moment. So we've got calçots. Calçots are these. It's like a cross between a spring onion and a leek that come from Catalonia. And the season the season is now. So it's sort of the month of February, basically, late January, February. And you grill them with Romesco sauce.
Oh, wow.
And they're delicious, but they've got they have these huge calçotades, they're called in Catalonia, which is basically a calçot festival.
Is it like a ramp? Did we decide?
Is it like wild garlic?
No, it's not. It's not more like a spring onion. Between a spring onion and a leek. So they're delicious. We've got a very fine looking caldereta of monkfish on. Caldereta is a sort of a thick soup, I suppose, which is delicious, and yes, the menu's always got interesting and new things going on.
You get so excited about food still, don't you?
Yes, yep, I'm still a very hungry person. I mean, it's nearly lunchtime.
No, the
natural appetite is beginning to kick in.
Now you still got pork belly on the menu?
Still got pork belly, yeah.
And I remember the first time I was here, you said you had the greatest amount of trouble figuring out how to get it just right.
And it did take us a while, actually.
And then you finally said, I think you talked to your mother, and she said, do it this way, and that was the secret.
Yeah. Well, there's quite a lot of test runs of the pork belly, but it's one of those dishes where you can perfect it. It's delicious.
And it's still on the menu six years later?
7 years later, yeah, and it's still one of our big sellers 7 years later as well.
So you've always been way ahead of the curve. You know that.
Well, not deliberately so.
No, but you just built that way, I think. You know, with the idea of the Spanish tapas food. You were one of the earliest pork belly guys.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Let's just circle back again because Fino is, of course, where we started with Sam and Brother Eddie, and we're back here. But in between the circle, there's a place called Barrafina, which is just around the corner. And Quo Vadis, just quickly, Sam, for those people who haven't listened to those programs, introduce those two sister establishments.
Yeah, of course. So about 3 years ago, we opened Barrafina. And Barrafina is a much more carbon copy of our great favorite restaurant, Cal Pet, that I mentioned earlier in Barcelona. And it's only bar eating, so no tables. 23 seats at a bar, with all the cooking done straight behind it, so very close to you.
Oh, yes.
And the food style, our executive chef is Nieves Barragan, is executive chef of Fino and Barrafina, so the cooking is very similar. But stylistically, it's a very different place. We don't take reservations. It's very informal. It's very bustly and busy and noisy and atmospheric.
Like Cal Pep, yeah.
Like Cal Pep, exactly. And it's great. It's been a great success for us. It's good fun. And then that was Barrafina. And then about a year and a half ago now, we took over Quo Vadis. And Quo Vadis is sort of been one of a fixture on the London restaurant scene since it opened in 1926. And Karl Marx used to live in the building. In fact, he wrote Das Kapital there. So this is a building with an amazing amount of history, which before we took it on had fallen really on hard times, I suppose. So we renovated the building. It's a beautiful Grade One building with a very sort of distinctive frontage in the middle of Soho. And we took it over and changed it. It had always been a sort of Anglo-Italian menu. And we got rid of the Italian side of it and really doing a modern British thing, like we do with the Spanish restaurants. So taking great ingredients.
Awful.
Awful. It's not sort of not like St. John quantities of awful.
Oh, no,
But you know, we've got we tend to have a calf's brain and a sweet bread and a few other things. But amongst lots of other things, I mean, it's not
You certainly have crowds there.
Yeah, it's busy.
It's hugely popular.
Thankfully so.
Yeah.
So let's run down. There are three separate websites, I believe. Pronounce those into the interview?
We have finorestaurant.com, barrafina.co.uk, and quovadissoho.co.uk are the three websites.
And these are all within walking distance of each other.
They are within
walking distance of Oxford Street. The Fitzrovia neighborhood we're in is a very interesting neighborhood. It's near the British Museum. Listeners, you just have no excuse, and we know you'll be delighted. And Sam, it's such a pleasure to see you.
Oh, well, it's very nice to see you both.
Yeah, I'd love to see you.
Welcome back.
Thanks, Sam. And now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, here we are again, and I guess it's appropriate if I just briefly mention this. I don't want to discuss this at length, but Peter had a good time going off on his own to the next restaurant and interview because I was laid low by a bug, and spent a day and a half sipping green tea in my hotel room. But Peter had a banquet as usual.
Peter was not sipping green tea. Peter was sipping on fine wines with some new concepts in Chinese restaurant menu that Bernard Yeo from Kai Mei Fair, a place we went to for the first time last year, wanted to talk to us about, and we were delighted to accommodate them and absolutely delighted with everything that we ate. Bernard is a thinking man's restaurateur, of that there's no doubt, so he's always thinking about what to do, always trying to flex his arrangements so as to make them even more interesting. So you'll get some insight from hearing what he has to say and meet some interesting characters. Alex, who's been there for a long time, and a new pastry chef, and words about a new wine program as well. So here's Bernard Yeo talking to Peter at Kai Mei Fair. A year ago, On the Menu came to a Chinese restaurant in Mayfair, almost a contradiction in terms, just around the corner from the Grosvenor House, two short blocks from Park Lane, and we met Bernard Yeo, who runs a restaurant called Kai Mei Fair. And we had a wonderful time, which those of you who were with us on the menu then will remember hearing about. Okay, we're back in London again, at Kai Mei Fair, but we're here for a special reason, because you would think that a Chinese restaurant formula that's been successful in London, getting a Michelin star. Bernard, why would you want to change that?
Well, we haven't so much changed it as developed it further. I mean, from day one, the aim has always been to change people's perceptions of the Chinese restaurant experience. And over 16 years now we've been here, every 3-4 years we'll add something to the experience. And most recently we've been looking at the idea that most of our meal experiences were starter, main course led. But we wanted to add desserts to it, in a more significant way. And desserts do not normally feature so heavily in traditional Chinese dinners or lunches. And also we wanted to explore the matching of drinks, wines and otherwise with Chinese food, which we started last year when we first met you.
Now let's take this one at a time. Since we have the dessert chef here, Mark, first of all, welcome to On the Menu. And you're new here. You've been here for how long?
About 9 months now, I think.
What was the concept? Bernard explained it to me, but why don't you explain it as well so we can see if it's the same?
It never matches, does it? The concept was that we don't specifically go for Chinese desserts, but use Chinese ingredients and flavors within the dessert area, basically.
And where you were dessert cooking, more conventional?
French, modern European
French,
restaurant.
Okay, all right. So what did you serve for us today?
Today we had the mango cake with pandan milkshake and palm sugar ice cream, and the ginger dumplings with lemon foam and honey ice cream.
Now, what makes them different than Chinese desserts?
I don't believe the style.
You can speak freely. We can't tear the microphone away from you. We might edit it out, but we can't tear the microphone away from you.
But I have to live with the boss. No. I think the use of ingredients is slightly different to the standard Chinese dessert concept. But the flavors are very much within specifically Bernard's childhood for the mango one. He was quite excited with the flavors there. And so it's really trying to use the flavors rather than the traditional styles, which I've tried and been led to believe are very heavily soup-based. So moving away from that somewhat. The dumplings are actually based on the rice dumplings that you would find in a Chinese restaurant, but with a few different things.
things that made them, I must quickly say, quite delicious. But here's a tough question. Was the one you tried that didn't work?
Dessert?
Yes.
More than one.
More than one. So, so there is a translation process going on.
Oh, of course.
And you and Bernard and Alex work on it together. What's been the feedback from customers, Alex and Bernard?
It's been extremely positive, and surprise is probably the best way of describing it, because for a lot of our customers who've been coming to us for a long time, very often they wouldn't have dessert, and they just would not have crossed their minds to order dessert. And now I've got customers who will have a meal somewhere else and come here just for dessert, which is the biggest compliment we can possibly get.
It sounds like you were on the right track. Now, you're always thinking about what's going on. So it's not just the dessert thing that's been happening. You also said we're doing something really very un-Chinese in the main course department with our meat and fish. Can you explain the concept behind that? And then we'll have Chef Alex talk about how he's implemented that on the plate.
It's to do with a basic idea of how produce is dealt with in Chinese cooking. If you look at more traditional or well-known recipes for meat dishes, the meat tends to be cut into thin slices, tends to be quite heavily seasoned, and usually there's quite a lot of sauce. Now, that can, I suppose, be traced back to the quality of meat which is available in places like Southeast Asia, where the meat tends to be quite tough. And the only way to really deal with it, and plus with the hot climate over there, the only way to cook the meat is to cook it well done, unless you were going to stew it over a very long period. The thing is, you have really, really good quality produce over here in England. So you have to change the way you work with the meat. Whereas most Chinese, even for a lot of our dishes, we still cook it in the traditional way, but this whole new section we have, it's not a change, it's an addition to what we have.
Now, where did you get this idea? This seems like a revolutionary idea. And as we were talking earlier before we started to record, you didn't mention anywhere in the world where a Chinese restaurant is doing the same kind of thing. So was it a revelation? Did you actually chat with someone about it and the idea sort of flashed on in your head?
Strangely enough, it's something we've done all the time with barbecues we have at home. We'll always marinate the meats for long periods of time with Chinese sauces. And we'll cook the meat as you would do a conventional barbecue. And what you end up with is larger cuts of meat, which have a very definite Chinese identity in terms of the flavoring. But the actual way in which it's presented on the plate is more Western, I suppose, and you actually get to taste the actual flavor of the inherent flavor of the produce.
So when you came in and you said, "Chef Alex, I want you to change everything you know about how you're going to cook meat and fish," what did he say?
Strangely, it wasn't actually as difficult as it sounded, because it was an experience which he had himself as well. But for some odd reason, it just never happened in the restaurant. You know, it's quite, we get a lot of street stalls back in Malaysia where they would be serving barbecued meats which have been marinated. But it's not a revolutionary idea. The idea of marinating meats and then cooking it in larger cuts is not revolutionary at all. But it's just using it in the context of a Chinese restaurant, which is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So what did you think, Alex? What's your, when Bernard came to you and said, "We want to do it this way, and I want you to throw out all your preconceptions about how you're supposed to do it," what did you think?
For me, I'm thinking it's not a problem for me. And I have this experience in the Far East, especially when I was in Singapore, that kind of the dishes already did before.
Now, what did we have today? We had just one excellent thing after another. Can you remember what they were? Just as examples, we had, well, I'll give you a clue. We had scallops to start with, and we had lamb when we finished. But take us through the progression of the wonderful things that Bernard and I sat here and enjoyed.
Okay, I think the lamb, the our roast lamb with crisps, mori, with an Asian picker. I think it's a great experience for me. As last year we did in the Taste London event, we sold our almost 1,000 potion in 2 hours. That's why first me and Bernard, we discussed we put in one additional section into our section, either dim sum or roll section. Then at the end, both we agree we did put the roll section. And that day, you come out this is our big currency bars with black vinegar and as well the tomato.
And you did pork belly in a new way too.
Yeah. It's the way we did in fries the pork belly is in a typical Chinese kitchen is we call it xiu yok, it's a roasted pork and with the skin. And what I'm doing here is it's a skin off and slow cook in the oven 10 hours. Then finishing pan seal. On top is some of the salsa and with the spicy bean sauce.
Great. Now, what was the spice that was with the scallops that was so delicious? There was a spice in, there were some spices in the sauce. You had some frizzled, you had some frizzled onions on top.
Yeah.
And then down below you had something
it's
green.
It's a char grill, spring onion salad. The spice of the, what we get is the goji berry. It's a wood berry. In the Chinese word, we call it geiji. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially it's good for health and for eyes. And goji berry black bean. Yeah, we finely chop. Then we mix with the sisu vinegar and seasoning with lime and chopped chili. Finishing with the crisp leg on top.
And it was delicious, wasn't it, Bernard?
Yeah, absolutely delicious. I mean, we were always convinced that this style of food would work and it would taste really, really good. But the only question we had was whether we could gain acceptance. This was the unknown. Whether or not the customer would look at the food and think whether it had enough Chinese characteristics to it to warrant being served here. And as Alex mentioned before, we had an outdoor event called Taste of London, which is 45 restaurants. I think there's 30 Michelin stars in there, where restaurants would come along and have sample size dishes priced at 3, 4, and 5 pounds, much less than what it normally costs to eat in those restaurants. And we tried the lamb in that event, and we sold 900, almost 1,000 portions every single day within 2.5 hours. And that really gave us the indication that it could work. I mean, the only negative from that event was customers leaving that event and coming straight to the restaurant to try and get the lamb. But of course, at that time, we didn't have the lamb on the menu.
Now, you're up to something else as well, because you had an excellent wine program a year ago, but you're investing resources in that even more as well.
Yeah, I think for many years, the role of wine within a Chinese meal, for me personally, it was almost like a special occasion drink. It wasn't something which I would necessarily consider personally to be an essential part of the meal, to be a necessary part of the meal. However, since we've put time and effort into seeing how the role of drinks generally would work with Chinese food, I actually find it very, very odd now and incomplete to have a meal here without several different wines. It's completely changed my perception of the role of wine. And this is the extra bonus. We've always been trying to change the customer's perception of the Chinese restaurant experience, but for once, my personal experience of what a Chinese meal has transformed.
And what do you say, Mark? Is that the way you look at it too?
I haven't yet eaten here for a full meal. That's happening next week. So I will be able to tell you after that, so I'll see you in a year's time.
Okay. And what about you, Alex? Are you a wine drinker with your Chinese food?
For me, I can be I can drink, but it's not a big drinker.
Okay.
I'm thinking Chinese food can pair with the wine. It's got very well.
I think you can have some fun. The new sommelier's name again. He's we have a room full of people and he's not here. But let's talk about him behind his back.
Sure. Luke Richardson joined us about 2 months ago now, 2-3 months ago. And what he continued to develop what Michael, our manager and sommelier for quite a while, started. And he's kind of taken one step further, and it's the most obvious change is the number of wine glasses on the tables. And again, the role of wine within it was incredibly difficult even for Luke to find a way of matching our food with wine. Partly because the flavors are so intense, and the flavors are flavors which are not commonly experienced with wine. So it took a lot of time, but he's been extremely successful with it.
Well, it sounds like you're going to continue to have fun. And Kai Mayfair in a most unlikely location, just off Mount Street, two small blocks back from Park Lane. It's a place you'll be surprised to find, but it's a place that I think you'll enjoy. And Bernard, I think you have a website so that people can get additional information and can come here just as we have done it on the menu.
Yep, the website is www.kaimayfair.co.uk.
And I wouldn't be surprised if next year or the next couple of years we come back again, because Bernard will be up to something new. In the meantime, he keeps on picking people's brains in New York City and everywhere else on the planet he can find. And it's always a delight to meet you. And Alex, good to see you again. Mark, welcome. I'm sure you're going to have a wonderful time here. You have a last thought, either of you, for our listeners? Mark's too shy.
I have one thing to say for any of the listeners who do have the possibility of coming in and dining with us. And the only one thing I always say is order something unfamiliar. Our menu is probably 80% dishes which are specialties to us. We have a small number of dishes which are the comfort recipes. But I would absolutely encourage anyone coming here to order something unfamiliar.
In fact, you should just sit back and relax and say, what ought I eat to eat?
That's our favorite comment from a customer.
Which is exactly what I did today. Everything I had was delicious. Bernard, again, once again, thank you. Alex, good to see you again. Mark, welcome. I'm sure you'll have a wonderful time here. Thank you so much, all of you.
Thank you, Peter. See you next year.
I guess I get to go next year, maybe?
Yeah, of course you get to go next year. And I'm sure they'll be up to something new.
Exactly.
One of the things he was excited about, which I think he mentioned briefly in the interview, but it's worth noting anyway, is that they once again have their Michelin star. Mm-hmm. Quite something for a Chinese restaurant, although they're not the only one. And they were very excited last year. They're equally excited this year.
This is not like an ordinary elegant, beautiful
this
place.
This is not your neighborhood Chinese restaurant.
No.
This is a fine establishment with fine food, wines, and desserts to match, as of course you just heard about.
And now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, and let us introduce you to a new friend that we made. The restaurant's name is Gioconda, which actually is the Mona Lisa in Italian, yeah, but that's not the whole story.
No, this is a quick explanation why, from Chef Paul Maroney. After all, it wouldn't be fair to visit London if we didn't dine with a mad Australian chef.
Yes, right.
And, this mad Australian chef and his wife Tracy don't seem to run with the regular crowd of chefs from down under, but they set a very interesting table in a very interesting location, and you can be sure you'll have fun there.
So somehow or other, we always manage to find Australian chefs, even if we're not in Australia. So here we are in London talking to an authentic Aussie, right?
Hi there.
Yeah, and it's Paul Marini.
Marini. Yeah.
Okay, and you and Tracy own this restaurant called the Gioconda, which is really the Mona Lisa in Italian.
It's an anglicized version of the Mona Lisa.
Uh-huh.
In Italian. Yes.
Why did you select that as a name?
Well, there used to be a cafe here from about 1964 onwards called the La Gioconda Cafe.
Okay.
And it was given that we're in Denmark Street, it was sort of jobbing center apparently for musicians. One of the songwriters would whiz over and say, I need a harmonica player, and everyone would say, oh, I play a harmonica, or I play the drums.
Uh-huh.
And it was well known as a bit of a musician's haunt. There used to be a lot of recording studios up and down the street. I think the Rolling Stones recorded their first record at the Regent Sound Studios, which is just down the road. So there's a lot of history in the street. We bought the business. It was called Spice Indian Cuisine. And it was sort of painted pink and orange. So we changed a few things and sort of returned it to its original name.
And do you still get musicians dropping in?
We've had a couple in. One guy used to come here all the time, but we haven't had any celebrities, musicians in, if you want. Yeah.
Now, you are not a novice to this restaurant business. You owned restaurants in Australia and Sydney,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right, yeah. We had a place, we've had quite a few places over the years of different sizes and styles, but I think I've had about 6 or 7 restaurants in Sydney over the years.
7?
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
And so what lured you to London?
Oh, we'd been doing it for quite a while in Sydney, and Sydney's a great place, but we just thought we'd like a bit more of a challenge.
The market's tougher here?
No, I think the market's tougher in Sydney. You know, you get a lot of tourists coming through. There's a lot of, I'm not sure of the figures, but, you know, it seems like there's 1 million tourists in London every day. Uh-huh. They're all going somewhere, you know. Sydney's last stop to Heard Island. and as such, you don't get that much that many tourists and that sort of thing, but you know, we just thought we'd like to do something different. So we came over with sort of a very open mind of saying, well, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but we've been here for 18 months now, and
that's how long you've been here, right?
Yeah, we opened up in May, it's almost 2 years actually, May 2008.
Well, you're next, I think, watch out New York, because Tracy loves New York.
Yes, I know. Anyway, yeah, she does very much.
Now tell us a little bit about, you are the chef owner.
Yeah, there's myself in the kitchen. I bill it as the smallest kitchen in London. Whether that's true or not, I'm not sure. However, there's just me and a couple of helpers in the kitchen. We've only got about 30 seats, so
it's a
small place.
Yeah.
And
the area is called, this is part of Soho.
Well, it's sort of on the cusp of Soho and Covent Garden.
Oh, okay.
Well, I call it Tin Pan Alley or Denmark Street.
Oh, okay.
The English answer to Denmark Street.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about, do you bring your Australian tastes and flavors to this menu or not?
I suppose I've always, I did my apprenticeship here with the Roux Brothers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we love the Roux Brothers.
Yeah, many years ago. So.
Now, which?
With Albert at the Gavroche, but I also worked, they had a couple of places at the time in the city. So I worked there, and then I left there and lived in Paris for 3 years. So I suppose I call my style of cooking Frenchish.
Frenchish.
with a couple of day trips to Spain and Italy thrown in.
Yeah, I read that on your website.
So
you also had a funny thing on an Eskimo food on your website.
Spherification.
Spherification.
We don't do that. But I suppose I've never really, I'm not really sure. I mean, I've sort of always done sort of Frenchish type of food, so I haven't really taken on the Australian type of cooking, you know, whatever that may be, because it's varied and broad.
Now, yeah,
it's a big melting pot. Whether something will come out of it, something sort of generic or indigenous will come out of it in a few years' time, we'll see. But there's a lot of people experimenting, so.
I can tell you it's a lot better than when we lived there in the 70s. Ooh,
yeah.
Yuck. Hotel food.
Yeah.
British hotel food. Yeah. That's what we had. But anyhow, no, we're going to have lunch here. Could you just run through a couple of dishes describing them? Because people really like to know what the... They like to hear about food, even if they're not tasting it.
Yeah. I suppose what we try to do is be everything to everyone.
Uh-huh. I mean, that's a little hard.
Yeah, it is hard. We don't always succeed. But
that's not encouraging.
Most people get what they want, but, you know, you can't please everyone, as you know. But we try, I try to have a sort of balance between fish and meat. And, you know, and our sort of dishes, we try to include everything on the plate, you know, so you don't, theoretically you don't really need vegetables on the side, you know, we sort of, everything has vegetables with it.
Now, give us an example.
Oh, for example, we've got chicken breast with potatoes, Brussels sprouts, and roast garlic cloves. So that's, you've got everything on the, on that you should need, you know.
You have a lot of offal on your...
Yeah, well, I like offal.
We
you
do
know,
too.
I don't think a restaurant's got any credibility unless it's got tripe on the menu.
Yeah. That's like we, who was it that told us that wine has only one duty, to be red?
Exactly, yeah.
If you're not eating the fifth quarter, as they call it,
yeah, exactly.
Then you're not doing the right thing.
No, exactly. Well, I mean, you know, they're big animals, so there's lots of bits that should be used.
No, you don't do pig's tails, though, I'll bet.
No, I mean, we've got to sell them as well, but sell them. No point in making it if you don't sell
them. Well, Fergus Henderson sells them.
Yeah. But he's a British original.
Yeah.
What else have we got? We always have about three or four different fish specials on the menu. So today we've got turbot with clams and clams and mussels. We've got deep-fried gurnard, fish and chip style, tartare sauce. And then in the starters we've got a sort of crumble of cream shallots and wild mushrooms. That's a variation on a sort of apple crumble type of thing.
Uh-huh.
With chicken liver pate.
How are these scallops? I was looking at the scallops.
Yeah, they're just with harica beans and dandelion leaves and parsley. It's very simple. But
they're good scallops. Nice.
Yeah, they're delicious
scallops.
They come from down in Cornwall.
That's where Peter's brother lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we
should do scallops.
Yeah.
And what was the other thing I was looking
the
at?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, there was one other I was looking at here. Oh, tell us about the pig's trotters.
Yeah. The pig's trotters, we just poach those till they're tender and then drain them, take the bones out as well as we can, given there's an infinite, never-ending amount of bones, and then allow it to set and then cut it up into squares and just fry that till it's soft, and then we serve that on a salad of hard-boiled eggs, potatoes, and herb salad, just chervil, tarragon, parsley, that sort of stuff.
Now, you have a really big menu.
Yeah.
For a small restaurant, it's a big menu.
Now, the good thing about having a small restaurant is, you know, we're always full, so we know what we're going to sell. You know, it's not as if we've got a huge restaurant and we're usually half empty. We're always full. So we're able to nut out we've got some dishes that don't sell very much, so we don't make very much of them, or we don't have a lot on stock. And given that it's not a criminal offence to run out of the odd dish or two, and given that we've always got sort of five or six specials on top of that, that's fine.
So what are the specials today?
Well, we've got all the fish, and then we've got a couple of other fish starters as well. We've got red mullet with braised fennel and carrots. I'll get back to you on the other specials. They slipped my mind. That's Tracy's job to remember the specials.
It's okay. Customers. Besides, it'll be different on a day when a listener would come here. It'd probably be something different anyway.
It does. Yeah. The fellow ring, you know, from Cornwall about 11:30, and he delivered it here in the morning, the following morning. So you talked
to him the night before?
Yeah, the morning before, yeah. And they pack it up at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and drop it off. It's always at the front door when I get here in the morning.
Uh-huh. Now, what do you find is the difference between the London diner and your Sydney diners?
No, we've been lucky, we've always had what I call sort of educated diners, and they're people that know how to behave and they know what to expect, you know, what a restaurant does. They don't sort of they dine frequently, so they know they're match fit diners, I call them. So honestly, we find that they're pretty much the same.
And how does one make a reservation here? Because I read, we made ours via email, but you said you don't do that anymore.
Well, we just found that people would make a booking and, or think they'd made a booking and either they hadn't, they'd emailed somewhere else or, so it just got too confusing. So,
they,
our
so they,
phone
so they weren't sort of serious about
yeah,
it. Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. You know, often you can just show up and get a table, you know, certainly early in the evening. Otherwise, it's always best to book. You know, lunches are quieter than dinners, but it's always a good idea to book. And we're open Monday to Friday for lunch and dinner, closed on the weekends.
How about a website?
Yeah, Gioconda Dining, GIACONDA dining.com.
Okay.
And it's a very special place, I can assure you, and I know we're going to have a wonderful time. And we got to let you go into the kitchen.
Good day.
As you said, we have 15 minutes, and our 15 minutes is almost up.
Yeah. Okay, good day. Thanks very much.
Okay. Our pleasure, Paul.
Okay. Paul, good to talk to you. Good to meet you.
Okay, thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And no, we were not down the end of a tunnel or the bottom of a well. Unfortunately, a piece of our electrical equipment, the dummiest piece of it, the transformer, decided it would go on the blink. It had actually been blinking the day before, and this time refused to function altogether.
But we were in the right place for that moment.
We were in the right place for that. Yeah, we did a miracle thing and recorded that particular interview using the input microphones right on the laptop computer itself, and a great deal of very sophisticated editing to get it to that stage. And it turned out that although we were not in the perfect place, because musical instrument suppliers on Denmark Street don't stock electrical pieces of equipment like transformers, but they were able to tell us exactly where to go, and a 10-minute walk away just around the corner on Tottenham Court Road is shop after shop after shop selling computers, electronics, and the piece of equipment that we need.
But if you want to get a guitar, the place to go.
If you
want to
get a guitar, then Denmark Street's absolutely the place to go. And if you're hungry, Gioconda's the place to go. But everybody does. So as Paul mentioned in the interview, if it's dinner time, be sure to make a reservation. And it was full at lunchtime too. So you
places actually, despite the economy, were really full during weekday lunches. I was really happy to see that.
Yeah. In fact, when we got to Boundary, which we covered last week, we were arriving at 4 o'clock, and people were still leaving from lunch.
Yeah. Now we covered a lot of ground on this trip, as we usually do, but there is a physiological limit to how many restaurants we could visit. So we just wanted to sort of share with you some of the hot spots that we didn't get to. Particularly, I was really keen to go to L'Anima, which is modern Italian, isn't it?
That's apostrophe.
A-N-I-M-A.
And it's on the City of London edge of Shoreditch, only a very short walk away from Boundary.
And then Bocca di Lupo I wanted to go to.
Bocca di Lupo is, some people said to us, it's certainly got a lot of hype. It did not get nearly as many votes in people's minds as L'Anima, and as if London didn't have enough Italian restaurants already, a restaurant called Semplice, S-E-M-P-L-I-C-E, was recommended by the concierge at the Grosvenor House, and we heard very good things about it. When we were at Boundary, Peter Presswhite was on his way that evening to a wine bar called Terroir, T-E-R-R-O-I-R, and an S, so Terroirs. A similarly named recommendation also from the Grosvenor House, a restaurant called Texture. Just around the corner from Konstam at Prince Albert in the King's Cross area where we were a year ago, a new restaurant called Acorn House, which we were hoping to get into the schedule, but they said they've been inundated with visiting press, so I guess they must have decided they needed to sell some lunches instead of talking to us. The Dean Street Townhouse on Dean Street in Soho is a fine restaurant and also has rooms, so it's a little bit like Boundary. In Mayfair, good recommendation for a sushi restaurant called Kikuchi, which is somewhere near Gordon Ramsay's Mays restaurant in the Marriott Grosvenor Square. I didn't find exactly where it was. And if you're in a mood for Japanese, there's a fine Japanese restaurant which specializes in pairing Japanese food with sake called Sake no Hana.
That sounds dangerous.
It does sound dangerous, doesn't it?
But of course, you know, don't forget that pretty soon we're going to have, they're working on it now in the Mandarin Oriental. The most anticipated two new restaurants opening will be one by Daniel Boulou and the other one by Heston Blumenthal of Fat Duck.
Going head to head, it's hard to believe.
In the same hotel, and the Boulou, according to my friend Sarah Carney, who's a food critic, a restaurant critic in London, she toured the Mandarin space, and she said that Boulou was going to be opening in the spring, later this spring, and then Heston will hit it the fall.
Oh, okay. So that's what's happening there.
That's it. Yeah.
For those of you,
we have to go back. That's a long.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if we're going to do that immediately. But anyway, if you like the British Museum, which we do, we popped in just briefly on our way nearby, a restaurant called Number 12, which is in a street very close and is coupled with a hotel in an old-fashioned Victorian building of the kind that lines the squares around the Bloomsbury vicinity.
Yeah, it's following, there's a general worldwide trend of putting really good restaurants in museums. It used to be like
Number 12 isn't in the British Museum itself.
Oh, I thought it was.
No, it's in a hotel close by.
Oh,
but
well, it doesn't take a minute. There is a trend. Let's rephrase it. There is a trend of putting really good restaurants in museums.
No, the Tate Britain, the original Tate, has an excellent sandwich shop, and you can get salads and that kind of thing as well. The Tate Modern we went to a number of years ago. That's a very good place to go as well. Now back on our theme here of restaurants that we missed, Mark Hicks, who's a very well-known chef around the London area.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Broke away on his own a couple of years ago. And has now two places, not just the original Hicks, but also Hicks Chop House, which opened, I think, within the last year. We were delighted to have the chance to talk with old friend Brett Graham from the Ledbury in Notting Hill, who received a great honor this year, and that he got his second Michelin star. We went there, I think, 2 years ago, and really enjoyed lunching with him. And clearly he's doing very, very well. We couldn't fit him into our schedule, and he probably couldn't fit us into his anyway. I said, what's it like since you got your second Michelin star? He said it's been absolutely total madness.
Yeah.
He's been so busy. And let me see. Well, there's sure what? To be more. Oh, one last place. They're a little shy of the press right now, but that shouldn't detract from your attending there. The Lanesborough Hotel, which used to be a Hilton. It's right on Hyde Park Corner near the Duke of Wellington's Arch. And the restaurant there was going through changeover a couple of years ago. We knew that was happening. What we didn't know is that the hotel's changed its affiliation, so it's no longer a Hilton. It's a Sheraton. But it is a very fine hotel. And Heinz Beck, the celebrated chef from Hilton's La Pergola restaurant in Rome, has his name on the label.
Yeah, I don't know how much time he spends there, a restaurant called
Apsley's.
Yeah, I don't know how much time he spends.
Well, certainly someone who shall remain nameless did say that Heinz Beck sure isn't spending much time there. So it's his name rather than himself, but he does have a fine Italian chef who's listed as the chef de cuisine of the restaurant, so I think you can count on the fact that that's going to be a pretty good place. We did hear, although I don't have this information down on this piece of paper in front of me, that the Galvin brothers, Chris Galvin, who's at Galvin at Windows, atop the Hilton Hotel on Park Lane, and his brother, whose name I can't just recall at the moment, who's the chef at Galvin's Bistro Deluxe on Baker Street.
Which apparently, was fun. That's a lot of fun. Yeah,
we were there 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah, that was fun.
They have a new place. The name I cannot recall, but I'm sure if you Google it, you'll be sure to find it. That's Galvin. And I think that their main website is might be Galvin's Bistro. You'll find it for sure. And if it's anything like the other two places they have, it comes highly recommended.
Yeah, and I guess we never made it to Borough Market. This is the first time we've ever been in London when we didn't stop by and say hey to all of our buddies at the market.
Yeah, and at Roast Restaurant, where Iqbal Wahab has been on our program a couple of times.
So many restaurants.
Lawrence Keogh's cooking up a storm. In fact, if we had been planning to go on Friday, you probably wouldn't have been able to anyway. You did struggle out to lunch at Fino on Friday, but Saturday, I don't think you went out at all, did you?
I told you, I sat in the hotel room while you were out gallivanting.
While I was out gallivanting.
Holding my hand.
Yeah, there you go.
Except I was finishing my book. I finished The Elegance of the Hedgehog.
So there you go.
And was not happy with the ending of it
at all. So you didn't see you need me.
I started my Andy Warhol book.
Yeah, you didn't need me around anyway.
Well, and my green tea. God bless green tea.
And a thought for future years, interesting. Those of you who follow On the Menu know that we have relatives in London, James and Maxine, and James's sister Jane all live there, and we always get together around Valentine's Day. So this year, Valentine's Day being when we're in London, as an exception, James had said to us, you know what, restaurant menus aren't much fun on Valentine's Day. It's the same old stuff for a lot more money, so why don't you come to our house? So we went to their house, which is a now much more charming row house.
Now that it has a kitchen.
Now that they've built halfway back into the garden as well. James, who's a very accomplished designer and buyer of men's clothing, turns out is also very adept at work in the kitchen.
And he made a mean risotto, I must tell you.
Asparagus risotto, which was suitably washed down with some sparkling cava from Maxine's native land of Spain. So we all had a wonderful time, and Max and James and Jane, if you're listening, please note that we got your culinary magnificence into the program. I can't promise you you'll all get a welcome there, but nevertheless, there are plenty of other choices, as you can tell from the list that we read off to you. So I think it was the famous Dr. Samuel Johnson said that something to the effect that if you couldn't have a good time in London, there must be something really wrong with you.
It wasn't quite that way, but it was.
It was much.
If you didn't enjoy London, you didn't enjoy life.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
something really pithy, you might say.
I've used that in an article. That's why I remembered it.
And as another, if we can correctly misquote another famous Londoner, the diarist Samuel Pepys, instead of saying, and so to bed, we will say, and so to next week's program, when we hope you'll join us again, same time, same place. And in the meantime,
bye-bye.